Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm your host, Mark.
And I'm Yucca.
And today, we are going to talk about the winter solstice. The holiday is upon us, and we're going to talk about this wonderful Sabbath and various ways to celebrate it and what it means to us.
Exactly. So, first of all, I can't believe that it is almost the solstice.
Isn't that odd? Because this has been the longest year there has ever been.
Yes, it's been both at the same time.
Yeah, it's just super weird that 2020 is, on the one hand, it feels like 2020 has been going on for about 20 years. But on the other hand, it's already December.
Yep. So, well, let's talk a little bit about what is the winter solstice. This is something that humans have been celebrating for millennia.
Yes.
And then also maybe our personal relationships with the solstice. What is it on the wheel of the year for each of us?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Well, where should we start? The winter solstice, at least based on the archaeological survivals that we have, and this is true both in the Americas and in Europe and Africa and Australia, is probably the oldest human holiday. Mm-hmm. Because in all of those places that I listed, rock observatories have been built that allow a ray of light to penetrate and strike a particular point just at the winter solstice. Mm-hmm. Stonehenge is one of those. The Newgrange passage burial in Ireland is another. Mm-hmm. There are many.
Yeah.
And it's clear that this moment, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, although there are also observatories in Australia, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, this has obviously been a very, very important moment mm-hmm. in the passage of the year for people. And it makes sense.
Yeah. And we can presume that it was long before any of these structures were made.
Yes.
It had to have been important to put that much effort into doing it, because some of these are pretty impressive.
Yes, we were
just raw amount of work of hauling of stones for miles and miles to get that to work. And the engineering behind some of them is just amazing.
Yes. We were joking before we recorded that about Stonehenge and, you know, dragging the blue stones from Wales. You don't do that on a whim.
Yeah.
That's not something you invest your cultural energy in unless it's very important to you.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about why that might be. I mean, in the Northern Hemisphere, when you get to the winter solstice, you've kind of reached the point where anything perishable that you harvested has got to be eaten now, or it's not going to be good food anymore. Mm-hmm. It's 6 weeks after Samhain or Hallows, the flesh harvest where you've winnowed out your herd. And now it's truly the dark of winter, and you know that what you have ahead of you is a time period when there's not going to be any agriculture. And the struggle is basically to live on your stores until spring arrives and you can start gathering again.
Yeah. You're about to go into the hunger gap.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So the idea then, it's not terribly surprising that festivals throughout the world celebrate the winter solstice by piling on as many calories as they possibly can.
Yes.
Giant feasts, eat lots of stuff, eat very rich food, lots of sugars if you can get your hands on them, mm-hmm. lots of fats. And the idea being, you know, it's going to be lean times coming up. So pile it in now because you're going to need those stores.
Mm-hmm. And cozy in too, because this is the time period where humans can be born at any time, right? But the time between the harvest and the solstice is when conception most often occurs. When you just take a look at the when does it happen, even in today's world where we often have access to heaters and light and all of that, we still are pretty good at making babies this time of year.
Yes, sure. Because the nights are long, you go to bed earlier. Mm-hmm. There's
you lots need of that extra warmth. Yep.
Yes, there's lots of opportunity. Cuddling together is a great thing to do. And social gatherings, similarly. Getting a lot of people together in a room, which was not what we're encouraging right now at all, given the COVID-19 pandemic. And
yeah, wait a few years, we'll be able to do it again.
Yes, we're going to talk some about how we can adapt our Yule traditions to the COVID isolation conditions later on in the podcast. But traditionally, this is the time when your extended family comes in and your friends and you socialize and you share food and exchange tokens of appreciation for one another, whatever that is. So it's a very jolly time. It's a time that it's natural for people to associate with happiness, because it's a time when excess is actually the most evolutionarily sensible strategy for us to pursue, right?
Yep. So it's, for many people, a very beloved time of year.
Indeed. And one of the things about being a pagan is, and this has been talked about many times, I don't really want to belabor it a lot, but many of the traditions that we associate with the Christian holiday Christmas are, they're really pagan traditions. They're, you know, decorating trees and wassailing and, you know, all these kinds of things are very much sort of pre-Christian traditions that have been adopted into the Christian canon, and that's fine.
They stayed because they work.
They're beloved.
Feel great. Yeah, I mean, it's beloved. It feels good. It spreads that sense of community and joy, and yeah.
Yes, so these traditions are very beloved, and there's no reason why they wouldn't be. I mean, there's celebrations of family and relationships, and all of which, you know, with lots of good food and in some traditions, presents, you know, all of those good kinds of things. So in the pagan community, we readopt many of the Christmas traditions, which actually come mostly in the English-speaking world from Germany, from Prince Albert, who married Queen Victoria and brought his Christmas traditions to England, where they were adopted because they were the royal traditions. And then they got codified in novels like A Christmas Carol. And then, of course, in the 1930s, the Coca-Cola Company created the Santa Claus character. The Santa Claus character existed, but the fat man in the red suit with white trim and a big beard was created by an advertising agency in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these sort of memes and traditions are very, very recent, honestly, but they still hold the heart of the tradition of winter solstice in them, which is celebrate, be happy, be kind and loving to those who are your near and dear. We're all going to huddle together and get ourselves through this cold, dark winter time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Mark, what are, for your personal Wheel of the Year, how does this all tie in? Or your Hill of the Year?
Arc.
There we go. Arc. Excuse me.
Yeah, it's not a bell curve. That's depressing, because if it's a bell curve, then I'm just really kind of down on the downhill slope, and it's all, yeah, no, Arc of the Year is what I prefer.
I'm sorry. I was picturing a beautiful knoll with the sun on it and the all of that, but yes, the arc, excuse me.
Okay. I practice a Wheel of the Year, but I describe the human life or the metaphorical meanings of the cycle of the year as an arc, because there's this gap between the point of death, which is Hallows, and the point of birth, which is the winter solstice. The winter solstice is the time when the sun is born again. It starts to grow, right? It has shrunk down to this pale, wan, temporary, very, very short-lived sort of thing, and it starts coming back after the winter solstice. So to me, the winter solstice is the first of the year, and it is it's the time of new beginnings. It's the time of imagining possibilities. It's the time of new hope and the kind of innocent aspiration that we have for the newborn. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what it means to me. I went to the temple baths at Bath, England, quite a while back now. And that was really the sense that I got of that place, that those people were suspending themselves in the warm water of the hot springs in order to imbue themselves with this solar, optimistic, aspirational hope.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Thank you. How about you? What do you see the winter solstice as meaning, and how does that fit into your overall schema for the year?
Mm-hmm. So this is first winter for us. It is not the dead of winter. The bitter, most cold part really is the end of January, beginning of February for us. So this is where finally is real winter, right? The end of autumn has been kind of trying, but really there's some green still hanging on, and most of our trees are evergreens anyways. So we have pines and junipers, but there's not much green anyways. it's pretty brown here. Beautiful browns and golds, we'll say. But it's the point where winter has really begun. And then, of course, the days are starting to get longer and longer. And so there's that element of hope. But it's also the time when we are honoring the forest.
Hmm.
So especially the evergreen forest, because each season of the year, we honor a different part of nature in some way. And not quite the opposite time of the year, but close, we're honoring the grasslands and the forest and the grasslands. Those are our dominant terrestrial biomes. So the forest, but also the wild and the predator prey relationship. And that's what, when I say the wild, that's what I'm speaking of, is the honoring the trophic levels and that part of nature as we experience it on Earth. that part where the, and we deal with this a little bit in each of the holidays, but the predator does take and maintains the populations, maintains the balance in the whole system. Because if you don't have that predator in there, then your prey species, their populations grow too large and they overconsume the resources, and you have this drop that happens. And so recognizing the sacredness of them is a big element for us, in addition to all of this family coming together. And so it's interesting. It has a lot of this family growth and abundance, and yet also the celebration of death in a very primal way.
That's lovely. I really like that.
Thank you.
I mean, it's the image that I have is, you know, sort of a small cottage with smoke coming out of the chimney and mm-hmm. light streaming from all the windows and the sound of people happily eating and drinking inside, and outside the predator is prowling, right?
Yes. There is the mountain lion taking down the elk.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is very much how winter is for us. I mean, winter is a challenging time for humans. You know, despite all of our industrialized agriculture and all the rest of that, more people die in their old age at the darkest time of the year. Many of us suffer from seasonal affect disorder, which is can be debilitating depression. Mm-hmm. When there just simply isn't enough light in the day to sustain us.
Yeah.
Yes, the solstice is very much about clinging together in the face of adversity, of the elements and of the predators and of all of that.
Yeah.
And so it is simultaneously a celebration of all the ways that our relationships make us strong and of all of the gifts that our harvests have brought to us. And it's also kind of a cautionary tale because it's cold out there.
Yeah. So do you have particular traditions in terms of ways that you're decorating your home or things that you're doing with your focus or?
You know, I do. And I have to say that in terms of decorating and stuff, not terribly untraditional. I mean, the evergreen and mistletoe wreath on the door, the Yule tree with a big sun on the top of it, and all of the sort of precious things hung from it. We have a lot of antique ornaments from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s that speak to me of my childhood, which was not a great childhood, but Christmas, you know, for children is always kind of an amazing time. So that was a time when I felt good. Mm-hmm. So we have the antique ornaments. We have a lot of sort of wooden animals and glass mushrooms and things like that. A lot of nature symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And then other things like airships, because I'm into airships. And
well, of course, right? You got to have some airships.
You got to have some dirigibles flying around the top of your tree. I mean, that's just... That's goes without saying. A beautiful tall ship. Actually, this was kind of an amazing ornament. It was a ship in a bottle, and the bottle broke.
Oh.
And so I took the ship and made it into an ornament for a Yule tree, and it's beautiful. It looks so gorgeous on a Yule tree. It's really nice. So we do those things. We do a Yule log ceremony on the solstice itself, where we create a Yule log using the trunk of last year's Yule tree, and we decorate that with evergreen boughs and pyracantha berries, which look sort of like holly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we tuck little pieces of paper with our wishes for the coming year into this log.
Mm-hmm.
And then we burn it in the fireplace. So that's something we do on the solstice. Honestly, nothing terribly. And then we celebrate Festivus on the 23rd and erect an aluminum pole. Seriously, we have an aluminum pole.
That's
we
great.
We put up the aluminum pole and then we air our grievances, and it's hilarious. It's really fun.
Do you want to share the origins of that?
Apparently, it comes from an episode of Seinfeld. I've never seen the episode. I never watched.
Not really one myself either. Yeah,
but the idea of Festivus for the rest of us is just so hilarious. And then when I read about it, and it had the feats of strength and the airing of grievances, and it's just like, oh my god, this is so hilarious! I must do it. So
yeah,
I do that every year. The core ritual that my ritual circle has done, which is called Dark Sun. So it kind of fitting for this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Although it really refers to the moon, because we used to do a lot of kind of hiking to outdoor spots to do our rituals back before we got old. And we did that under the moon, and that was the Dark Sun for us.
Mm.
So that ritual is primarily about going out into the darkness and being around a cauldron, an iron cauldron, with some candles set in sand burning. And we talk about our experience of this time of the year and what our hopes are for the coming year. And we sing songs and all that good kind of stuff. And usually I sing sort of Ethiopagan filks of traditional Christmas carols, there's nothing wrong with them. What's the one? O Darkest Night is very serious, but I'm not remembering the one that I wanted to talk about, but it's like,
there's some in the back of your book though.
Oh yes, there are. In the back of my book, there's a whole collection of sort of Yule-ish songs that you can do.
Well, you have some for each of the holidays, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do.
Yeah.
So, we do all that in the outside, and then each of us has a taper candle, and we light those from the cauldron, and then we go into the house, and there are unlit candles everywhere, in every room, and we proceed from room to room, and we light all the candles in the house, every last Ooh. One of them, everywhere, until the whole place is Well, I wanted to say blazing, but I didn't really mean that. The place is not on fire, but it's very well lit.
Yes.
Extremely well lit. And we've brought the light back, right? We've gone from the darkness and we've brought the light back, because the house is in darkness and just has those unlit candles everywhere. And then we sit down and we have, you know, a giant feast, and we eat way too much food, and then we have way too much dessert. We drink way too much wine, and it's all really lovely. And then we all go to various bedrooms and go to sleep, and we have breakfast in the morning. And it's a it's just a gorgeous time, and I'm so sorry we can't do it this year, but that's how it is.
Yeah. Well, you want all of you to be there to do it next year.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's worth skipping that version of it this year.
It is.
Yeah.
So we were going to talk some about, well, what do you do in the absence of that in-person gathering? I think it's time for that, or is there more to say about traditional Yule rituals? Have you? No, you haven't told us about your traditional Yule
rituals. Yeah. Well, it's still developing for us because we have young children, and they're the oldest. So she'll be 4 and a half. And so we're definitely in the realm of remembering, and it being, you know, she's been looking forward to Christmas for a while. The younger one, who's 2, I have the like tiniest slivers of memories from that time period personally, but so we're still developing that, but we do. I always love changing the house out and bringing in the new colors and all of that. And the smells, which right now we've got pine and frankincense and all of those just delicious smells, and the baking. We actually yesterday went out and cut our tree, but we didn't cut a full tree. We just got a branch. We actually had someone deliver a tank to our place recently, and he was not very good with his trailer and bumped into our tree and knocked a branch on the tree. So we went, that is our Christmas tree this year. Wow. We cut down the branch, and the kids loved that. So instead of cutting a full tree, we cut the branch, and we set up our Marie Lloyd, which is our version of an old Welsh tradition from the south, from the valleys. And it was a wassailing, I can never say that word, wassailing.
Wassailing.
Wassailing, there we go. Wassailing tradition that is a very old one, and probably the original meaning got lost. But if you look up the Welsh Christmas horse, you will come up with it. And so what is done is you take a horse skull and dress it up beautifully, white laces, and, you know, put stones in the eyes and make it delightfully creepy. And the horse, Marie Lloyd, she'll go from house to house with her merry men. And there's several different versions of what happens. My favorite is, though, that if she comes to your house, you have to perform poems or a song. And if you don't do a good enough job, she barges in and drinks all your booze and scares your children and makes a mess of your place and then goes to the next house.
I love it.
And there is a resurgence of that in Wales right now. And it's connected in with the pride and our heritage and all of that. And so missing Wales and being far away, it's one of the ways that we connect with it. But we do not have a horse's skull. We have a deer skull. So we use our deer skull and have that. I think actually last year I put up a photo of it in the Ethiopagan Facebook group. We put it underneath our tree. And it's a spirit of mischief and poetry and ancient connection. And we'll do some Welsh poems. And I try and use that language with the kids most of the time. So it's a way for us connecting back with family and ancestors, even though we are on the opposite side of the globe from where our ancestors were. So that's a part for us. And then gifts. We do gifts with the kids, but we don't do as big a gift giving because we've actually split that into both solstices. We do gifts on the summer solstice, gifts on the winter solstice. partly because it's fun to give gifts, but also as a way of taking some of the commercialism, taking some of the focus on gifts away. And so if you have a special time of year, so you get your birthday and both solstices, then you, our hope is that maybe you can focus on some of the other aspects as well.
That's great. How wonderful. Yeah, we don't do gifts anymore. And I think that may, to some degree, have to do with the time of life that we're in. We don't need or want anything. When we want something, we buy it. But mostly, I mean, the last thing that I want is for someone to buy some trinket as a gesture. That's, no, I don't want that. You know, I'd rather have them say Merry Christmas and shake my hand. Of course, we can't do that anymore either. Yeah, that's lovely. And the Mary Lloyd is just a terrific tradition.
Yes, fantastic.
So cool. So, yeah. I've just you were talking about your horse skull deficit.
Yes.
And you know, you
we have
can
a
get
deer a, skull, though.
You know, you can get a 3D printed horse skull on Etsy.
That's, we have a printer, but there's no way we could print something that, horse skulls are big.
No, you can buy the skull itself, not just the
file,
the Thingiverse file, but the actual thing. And they're not super expensive. It's like $22, something like that.
We'll look into it. Well, yeah. We will acquire a horse skull one day. Well,
I'm sure you will. Southwest, there's a lot of horses.
I like skulls too. That's one of the things that we have a lot of skulls around.
Everybody likes skulls. At least in my religion, everybody likes skulls.
And they hang out. We mostly keep the skulls in the kitchen. We have a lot of bones and skulls in the kitchen. It seems very appropriate as just a reminder of that's food, folks.
That's what we're doing.
Yep.
We eat, and what's left are bones.
Yep. And we have some cattle as well, but the deer skull just looks more appropriate, right? When you see the shape of it,
it looks more,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A cattle skull is not, yeah.
Yeah, they're beautiful, but they don't have the same elegance that the horse skull does, so. But one day.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, why don't we transition into ideas for folks on doing Zoom or Google Hangout or whatever platform.
Sure. I have, I'm in the process of writing a post for the Atheopaganism blog about this. And honestly, there are a lot of things that I've learned about doing rituals on Zoom over the course of the past few months. And I need to shout out the Atheopaganism Saturday morning mixer group, because we did a great Samhain and we did a harvest ritual as well. And I've learned a lot of things by being involved with that. So here are some recommendations for how you can use Zoom in a way to connect your people, even when you have to maintain distance. And I would say the first thing beyond everything else is you have to let go of the expectation that it's going to be like it is in person. It's just not going to be that. It's going to be something else. And that doesn't mean it's going to be something bad. It just means it's going to be something else. So I think one of the things that we benefit from through this pandemic is that we have had to become more comfortable with the principle of change. You know, our lives go on. They go on day by day, week by week, year by year, decade by decade. And it's very easy to just sort of think that that's how it's always going to be. Well, no, this is a huge interruption. and it's not the first. This is what humanity has been dealing with ever since there's been humanity, there, at least since there's been civilization.
Yeah,
people living at density, there have been these plagues, and this is what we're dealing with now. So don't take it personally, and be safe, and do the things that you can do in order to feel connected with people, even though you're not physically in their presence.
Yeah.
So here are the things that I am recommending people do. The first is preparation. Because video conference rituals require interaction with technology, it can be really helpful to have attendees prepare for a ritual in advance so that they're in the right mind space. Suggestions include fasting, bathing, grounding, meditation on the theme of the ritual that's coming up, or preparation of materials for the ritual that you're going to be doing. The next is a technique that I created that I think is helpful, which is that one of the things that is really compelling about a pagan ritual is the altar, the focus, right? And it's hard to have that in a Zoom call. You've got all these faces and that's all. Well, what I have done is log into the Zoom call twice, once with my phone pointed at a focus that I have created, and once on my laptop, which is my face and how I can be interactive and all that kind of thing, so that people actually have the opportunity to focus on one of their windows, which is the actual altar with the symbols of the event, right? It's a little tricky to figure out, but with some duct tape, I was able to make that work for the Aethiopagan Hallows ritual, and it worked out really well. So I encourage people to experiment with that. Build your own focus for the theme of the event. Whoever is leading it can point their phone at their focus, but if you do your own work, your own creation of an altar, you will be more submerged into the feeling of the experience, and that's the most important thing. That's that's what ritual is about, right? We all want to feel submerged into this very present, very immediate, vivid kind of experience. That's what we want. So that's a recommendation. The next recommendation that I have is that you can have singing, you can have recitations. What you can't have them in is unison, because there's a lag on Zoom. There just is, and there's no way to avoid it. There's no way around it. Well, so
everyone's different internet speeds, and
yeah. So the best way to overcome that is everybody mutes except the performer. The performer sings the song or reads the poem or whatever it is, and everybody else can sing along and harmonize and do all those kinds of things. They just do it to themselves. And it's still very meaningful. It's wonderful. You know, there's this song and it's coming out of the screen and you can sing harmonies along with it, and it's great. What you don't want to do is to try to have everybody unmuted, because it'll make a mess. It'll just, it'll be a bad sound, and it isn't what you want to do.
And warning, if you're doing drumming,
Zoom
sometimes will actually cut that out. It will hear that it, I don't know what's going on there, but it will automatically mute it.
There is a button in the upper left on the laptop or desktop version of Zoom that says turn on original sound. If you turn on original sound, it'll hear everything. It won't just, It won't cut out all the background noise and just focus on your voice. So that allows you to play a drum.
Oh, that's
or something
useful
like
to
that.
Yeah.
It's yes, that's a very helpful thing to do. And if you're going to have someone playing a drum, then I highly recommend that everybody else be muted while they play a drum.
Yeah.
Because that way it doesn't get confusing or messed up. The next thing that I recommend is you can screen share stuff that you think is worthy of the attention of your ritual participants. And that can include things like a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. We included a YouTube video in our Samhain Saturday Atheopagan Mixer ritual. And it was a YouTube video of 1,000 burning candles. And it was, it started with one candle and then it kind of panned out and it went up and it scrolled back and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And 1,000 candles is so many candles. And the point of this was that we were walking through the land of the dead and that there were 20,000, that there were 200 times as many of these candles, which were dead from COVID, that we were walking through in order to reach the land of the dead and to communicate with our beloved dead. It was very powerful. And all we had to do was turn off the sound on the YouTube video and just play it as a shared screen. So that's something else that you can do that is also very useful. You know, for a solstice ritual, I could really see the possibility of one of those YouTube videos that is that's a fireplace. Right?
There's some great ones.
They're really great. I mean, they're so good that you almost feel like you can feel heat from them coming out from the screen.
We used to live years back in an apartment, and we didn't have a real fireplace. Our stove was an electric stove. We hung our stockings above our Xbox and just played the fireplace on it and had the crackling sound on repeat. And it helps you sleep. It's wonderful.
Oh, it really is. I mean, it's very informative for how programmed we are, how primed we are for that sound, the sound of a burning fire. Very evocative and effective. So you can use YouTube videos. You can also use a YouTube video on silent and then do a guided meditation over the top of that. So you can have beautiful visuals at the same time that you're doing a guided meditation by voice.
Yeah.
When it comes to performances, recitations, readings, invocations, have an individual do that. Don't try to partner people up or split them up or that kind of thing. Just have one person do it. And that will be very effective. The next thing that this brings me to is cakes and ale. People enjoy, and especially at this time of year, people really enjoy breaking bread with one another. And so I know that in the winter solstice ritual that I'm going to be doing with my circle, we're going to be bringing chocolate and red wine and, you know, whatever it is, so that each of us has something to eat and drink to share with one another after the main working of the ritual is done. It's so important to have those sensual experiences that help us to feel connected and to help us to feel the the profound meaning of the time that we're celebrating, right? Mm-hmm. When it comes to the main part of the ritual, I encourage people to create rituals that enable people to do something at home, whether it's tying knots or pouring water or lighting a candle, any of those things. You know, you assemble those pieces together and then everybody does it. There's a signal and they all do it together. They all light the candle together. And I will tell you, that draws the circle. It doesn't matter whether your people are all over the world. It draws the circle of everyone together that they all did the same thing. Mm-hmm. So that's a really important piece. Mm-hmm. And then my final piece of advice is social time. Mm-hmm. Especially at this time of year, but generally, we're isolated, we're separated, we're longing for one another. When the ritual is over, when the circle has been opened, or the door has been opened, or the sacred space has been put down, have a cocktail party for a while. Just visit with one another, chat about this and that, share what you have to share about what's going on in your life right now. Mm-hmm. I went to one online ritual, which was very sad because at the end of the ritual, it was like, okay, well, that was great. Bye. And I wanted to hang out with the people that had been in the ritual with me. And I think that that's something that we should all keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You sound great. So you've done quite a few. Do you have any suggestion on number of participants? I know that's going to depend on each group, but have you noticed any patterns in terms of sizes that seem to work particularly well?
This is actually a bigger conversation than it may seem, because the whole pagan framework for practicing religion is very cellular.
Mm-hmm.
The Abrahamic religions work because one dude stands up in front and then you can have thousands of people listening and participating, whereas paganism is much more egalitarian and mm-hmm. we're all in a circle. And my experience is that 20 people is good. 20, okay. people, 20 people is about as many as you want, because you want everybody to be able to have their moment of visibility and participation and all that, and conversation and all that kind of stuff. 20 is kind of pushing the edge of it, mm-hmm. right? So this is something that I have longer term thoughts about in terms of trying to figure out how paganism can become something that's more mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Because working in circles is challenging for that.
Yeah. Well, I loved the suggestions that you had. There's one that I could add on to a little bit, but I think it would only work in a situation where everyone who is participating is very comfortable with the technology side. And we know that there's huge ranges in terms of people's comfort, but something that I do for my daughter with virtual play dates. Now, we as the parents set this up, and it's very small scale, 2 or 3 participants total, but we match the virtual background so that they're all in the same play. We have different background, like do they want to play in the cute like cottage, or are they going to be in dinosaur land or that sort of thing? And then they have a matching environment. And if you have a small enough group where everyone is comfortable with navigating that element of it, there's a lot of really interesting stuff you can do with backgrounds and lighting and things like that, where you're bringing a little bit of the performative element in, as long as it's not making it stressful for the person, right? If the person is not comfortable with going, okay, now what am I supposed to do? You know, for some people, just the muting and unmuting is as much as they want to handle.
Right.
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 But if you're comfortable with that, there's some really cool stuff that you can do with Zoom. And I presume other platforms, I'm not as experienced on some of the other platforms, but I'm sure that you would have options on a Google Meet or FaceTime or whatever you're using.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. I never would have thought of that. I just sort of assume that there's always kind of there's one person who participates who has the minimal skill level to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to accommodate them.
Yeah.
But yeah, if everybody is comfortable with working with virtual backgrounds and all that kind of stuff, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Another model that you can use for Zoom rituals is if you set it up as a webinar. And that enables you to do a spotlight on a particular window, which could be your altar window, your focus window.
So as you should be able to do that with Zoom as well as the host, and you can assign host to multiple people at once. But on Zoom, you can, as the host, you can spotlight for everyone. Yes. So, I mean, with that, this gets into the, we won't do the tutorial for it, but you can look up how, as a host, you can spotlight and you can assign. I think you can actually, with the new ones, you can have two different windows spotlighted at the same time. So there's a lot of flexibility. Also, with the newer versions, you can grant permission to allow someone to unmute you, which has been one of those annoying things with the new.
Yes.
Yeah. And when you work with kids, I teach kids through Zoom, and it's sometimes they don't know how to unmute, and and they're trying to talk to you anyways. And so if you give permission to allow yourself to be unmuted, which you can always take that permission back, that can also help with the flow of rituals sometimes, because you may not know that there's a bunch of noise in your background or static,
right,
and the host mutes you. And so whoever's hosting, getting lots of experience working with the platform and maybe just watching a few tutorials, there's a lot of really interesting little tricks there that can help the flow of everything.
Hmm.
The thing that you can't do that I wish you could was arrange the view of the windows. So you can't say, okay, I want Mark to appear in position A and Yekka to appear in position B. And
you can drag them.
For you, but you can't do it for everybody else.
For everybody.
Right, yeah. So I could put you where I wanted to, but that wouldn't do anything to anyone else's view.
Well, that sounds equitable and...
Well, yes.
consent based.
Yes.
Presuming that I consented that you could put me where you wanted to put me.
Exactly. So that would be fairly easy just to turn on, even permission or not. But anyways, let's come back to our Zoom rituals. Or is there anything else you wanted to add?
You know, there wasn't. And I'm sure that there are other things that I'm missing that I'm just not remembering right now about how best to conduct these Zoom rituals. They're not the same. It's not the same as actually holding the hand of your circle mate and feeling the lick of the fire in the middle of the circle. And I miss that tremendously. I know that a lot of other people miss it as well. But we have to get through this thing.
Yeah. And
we have to get through it without endangering ourselves. And we have to get through it without kidding ourselves that some sort of magical force is going to protect us as we go through the enactment of what we're accustomed to doing, right?
Yeah.
So the winter solstice is here, and it is a time to gather with our loved ones, and we have to do it in the way that is sensible and safe for us and for them. That's the most important thing to recognize. You may feel healthy as a horse. You know, you may be a 30-year-old who bench presses 200 pounds. But the people that you love aren't all in that condition.
Yeah. And you can still spread it even if you can fight it off yourself.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
I'd like to say a silver lining, though, is I miss the physical as well. But it's also been nice this past Thanksgiving. We never travel for Thanksgiving. I have siblings all over the country. And for the first time since in decades, I think we all had some Thanksgiving together.
Hmm.
Right? We did the Zoom and it was cute and funny. And the kids were running around from screen to screen because there were parents in different rooms. And we got to have a connection and that we wouldn't have otherwise. Because people are becoming more accustomed to this connection over distance.
Yes.
And that allows things like the Atheo-Pagan Saturday mixer might have happened without the pandemic, but a lot of people have the skills to do it because the pandemic.
Exactly.
So there's some, yeah.
And there's more incentive. People feel really alone. Mm-hmm. And so there's more of an inclination. I mean, last Saturday, which was yesterday, I remember people saying, you know, I look forward to gathering with this group every week. It's people who see the world similarly to how I do. And, you know, I've been here barricaded into my house for months and, you know, you're friends of mine. So I feel like there's a real opportunity here. There's definitely a silver lining.
Yeah. And that even when we do get to go back to being able to have in-person rituals again, I hope that this is a skill and a practice that we'll take with us into the future and can share with our community that is all over our beautiful planet.
Me too.
So.
Although I have to say, and I've sort of name dropped this a bunch, and people get all excited, like in the Discord channel or on the Facebook group. There will come a time when we do Atheo-Pagan-icon.
I can't wait for that.
In person. And a part of the ticket will be the carbon offset for your mm-hmm. travel. So you'll have to register and you'll have to indicate how far you're traveling. And then we'll include the carbon offset so that doesn't cause a problem, right? We want to be a zero carbon event. And I am so looking forward to seeing so many people that I've never met in person, most significantly including you.
Well, I think that the solstice is also a time of dreaming for the, not dreaming in the, oh, it'll never happen, but it's the quiet of the night.
Yes.
It's the night of the year. And we've got the whole new year before us. So. Yes.
That's so well said. Very poetic and very well said. Thank you, Yucca.
Maddie Lloyd would be proud. Maybe she won't drink all my beer. What do you think, Mark? I think we've gone through quite a bit on the solstice today. Anything else that you'd like to touch on?
Not that I can think of. I mean, you know me, I could just keep babbling, but I wish every one of our listeners a happy, joyous, connected, pleasurable solstice season. If you celebrate Yule, then I wish you the very best of that and all the other various holidays from Krampusnacht to Festivus. I hope I hope you have much joy out of it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.